Job 15, these are the words of Eliphaz. I think we are exposed to the wrong views of these three friends, who are, of course, rebuked by God at the end for not having spoken what was right, in order for us to, as it were, come through that sort of dialectic towards truth. In other words, error is presented and then corrected so that we can get an insight into how people's thinking goes wrong and not to make the same mistake. One of the big things that they keep on about, is that the elders and a long line of tradition behind us uphold our position. Verse 9, what do you know that we don't know? What do you understand which is not in us? With us are both the grey-headed and the very aged men, much older than your father. The idea is that the older a person was, the more wise he was, and they were very proud that they were speaking as they saw it and reasoning in line with what their fathers and ancestors would have thought. And therefore it is impossible, according to them, to consider that Job might actually understand something that they don't understand. It is impossible for them to accept that their elders were wrong. And this is a mentality that is seen so often throughout all Christian groups. The argument of Catholics and Russian Orthodox and so forth is always, ah, but the fathers thought this. The church fathers thought this. Who are you to disagree? And so it goes on with small-time denominations. If you raise with an Adventist an issue that disagrees with Ellen White, well, you can't disagree with Ellen White. Why can't you? And so it is with Christadelphians, with John Thomas and Robert Roberts and all kinds of groups, Jehovah's Witnesses with the Watchtower. The idea is that, look, I am just nothing. We are nothing and you are nothing. You're not very smart. I'm not very smart. Couldn't possibly be that little you or little me could actually have a truth that traditional wisdom within our community has not accepted. And they always like to say, oh, but these fathers, these books that were written by them have stood us in very good place, you know, as a community. You know, all these various denominations say the same thing. And yet, the call of God is to individuals. And I think this idea that you can possibly have more truth than a line of tradition, yeah, this is actually attractive. Because when the penny drops, that, wow, actually they were all wrong on this particular point. It's a scary thing because you are out on your own. If you're within one of those communities, you will suddenly feel alone, and you're alone before God and the Bible. And it's easier to run for cover, to run back inside, to run back into the community where everyone accepts the line of tradition. And yet God wants personal relationship with people. And because of that, I think that he structures things in this way so that a person may grow up in a certain community where there's a line of tradition and where there are semi-inspired writings which are supposed to be the great truth. As I say, John Thomas for the Christadelphians, the church fathers for the Catholics and the Russian Orthodox, the Watchtower for the Jehovah's Witnesses, and the writings of Ellen White for the Adventists, and all these groups effectively have got these things, these features, because it's so attractive. And as soon as you disagree, it's a very lonely path, and we are gregarious, really, by nature. I think we all want to be in some circle of friendship and acceptance. And to step out from that and to say, nah, actually, that is not right. Ooh, well, who do you think you are? That's the immediate response. Who do you think you are? And you see, they say in verse 17, Eliphaz says, I will show you something, listen to me, which wise men have been told by their fathers and have not hidden it. So he makes out, look, I've got my own opinion here, because everybody, of course, likes to think I've got my opinion. I've got my own opinion here, but it's that which wise men were even told by their fathers. In other words, my opinion is not my opinion. It is the view of the fathers. No, I'm not trying to encourage us in a sort of overgrown adolescent way to just sort of be disagreeable for the sake of being disagreeable, to say, that can't be right because that's traditional wisdom. Well, of course, there are things that are true, and they remain true for all time. But I think God intends us all to be on a journey. And so he may have put you by birth, as it were, or by conversion, where you were first converted to Christ. He may have put you in a group of people who indeed may have shown you many true things, but he purposefully put you in a position where you would understand one day that the traditions and etc. that you have been taught and which are accepted as sacrosanct in your community are actually wrong. And I think why he does that is that, well, he wants you to relate personally with him and with his word. Well, this idea that we don't know anything, as one of the friends says elsewhere, we're but of yesterday, who are we to disagree with the tradition of the elders? This really reflects a very low view of human nature, that you and I as individuals, we can't figure any truth out for ourselves. And you can figure it out from the Bible, you need other people to guide you or whatever. And this low view of human nature is seen very clearly in the way the friends argue. See verse 14, what is man that he should be clean? What is he who is born of a woman that he should be righteous? In other words, you can't be clean and you can't be righteous because you're just a dirty little human. And they go on even further, having put up that idea, verse 15, God puts no trust in his holy ones, that's his angels. Even the heavens aren't clean in his eyes. Well, no, that's not true. The Bible is very clear that all the angels, all of them, are obedient to God. And there is no Satan in the classical sense, that all angels are all obedient to God. That's the first time you've encountered that view. Have a look at my material called The Real Devil, realdevil.info. And actually, Bildad repeats this low view of angels when he says in chapter 25, even the stars aren't pure in God's eyes. Now, God corrects all this at the end in Job 38 when he says, no, the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. In other words, the sons of God, the stars of God, are not divided into clean and unclean. They are all obedient to God. So they have a very low view of the planet, of the situation up in heaven, and of human beings. And so the question of the book of Job is, I think, rather than why do you suffer, I think it's really how can a man be just with God? And how they're putting it here is, how can a sinful man ever be clean before a perfect God? Well, you can be. This is the whole point. This is the whole point, that God is willing to cleanse. And they are all overlooking the parameters which God set at the beginning of the whole book, where we're told that Job was a perfect man before God. Doesn't mean he didn't sin, but it means that God accepted him as acceptable and clean before him. And God is extremely positive about Job. And yet they say, verse 16, how can man be just with God? How much less one who is abominable and corrupt, a man who drinks iniquity like water? Sure, we sin, and we must give that its due weight and not try to talk it up as simply unwisdom or just unfortunate behaviour or whatever. But Job is far closer to the truth in chapter 14 when he says that God has a tender desire to man, the work of his hands, that he looks at us as his children, and has this natural affinity towards us, because we are made in his image. But they're on about, nah, you know, man is awful. He's abominable to God. And that's what they say. He's abominable and corrupt. And yet they use the word about Job. In Job 19 and in Job 30, they say, Job, you are an abomination. You're abominable. It's a nasty thing to say to somebody. But here they say, well, yeah, man generally is an abomination. Well, no, I think their low view of human nature leads them to a very low view of people. They think that because they reckon that human beings are just rubbish and are just awful, that therefore they can cuss another human being. James 3 picks up this same problem where James says, don't curse man, because man is made in the image of God. In other words, if you curse man, you're basically saying, no, he's just rubbish. He's not made in the image of God. That's why people with a low view of human nature tend to be abusive, because they do not see the value and the meaning of persons. This is why in the early days of European colonization of Africa, there was a lot of bad things done to African folks, and colonialism generally, not just in Africa, in other parts of the world as well. The missionaries who seemed to go in with the soldiers and the traders and the exploiters, one of their big messages was the completely abominable, awful nature of humanity, of human nature. And you can sort of see how it all fitted in, that sure, you can abuse people. Sure, well, because they're only filth anyway. You know, God thinks the guy's filthy, so you can treat him like filth. God thinks he's less than a dog, so you can treat him as less than a dog. Whereas I would argue that the Bible actually posits a very high view of human being. When you come to think about what is human nature, and the Bible does not define it in neat little terms, but what you do have as a definition of human nature is really Jesus. Because the Lord Jesus was not God, he had our nature fully, and yet despite that, he was, Hebrews 7 says, holy, harmless, and undefiled. He showed us what is possible within human nature. You can be holy, you can be harmless, you can be undefiled, even though you've got human nature. And whatever you posit about human nature, you're saying about Jesus, and you've got to be very careful in what you say. So this low view, as I say, of humanity, of human nature, leads people to abusiveness. Whereas I think the higher view of perceiving the value and the meaning of the human person leads you to the life of love, sensitivity, desire for salvation, not abusing, etc., which is absolutely everything to do with true spirituality.